Chapter 8, Part 2. Steve is at the far end of Tony's workshop, shoving all the guns and ammo he can carry into his belt because Tony's basement is much better stocked than Tony's apartment. Tony's about halfway into the suit, the technicians beginning to fit the chest plate around him. Steve's never actually seen him suit up before, and he wishes he had time to linger on it because the process is fascinating. People are milling around Tony with pieces of metal and wires and hoses, and Steve can't make sense of a single part, but somehow it's just like what he thought the future was going to be when he was a kid. And he's here watching it, and it's Tony, and Tony is his soulmate, and Tony loves him, and he's never going to get tired of thinking that. He holsters another gun. He's sure he's grinning like an idiot. Tony lifts his head over the swarm of technicians, catches Steve's eye and winks.
"Be good, darling, and I'll let you take me out of the suit when we're done."
"Promises, promises," Steve says. They're on radio silence because broadcasting their location would be deeply unwise. Besides, there's not much Steve has picked up so far that makes any sense whatsoever. There are a lot of people calling for help. They're going to get help. Soon. They're almost ready to go out there. A computer screen near Tony blinks on, and Tony frowns at it. "Perimeter security is picking up someone with an Ultimates transponder."
"That can't be right. The Triskelion went down."
"Where?"
"Here," Tony says.
There's a flash of movement by the closed door, and Steve has his gun unholstered before he registers exactly what it is. Jen's standing there, full size now, wingless, her hands crackling with the remnants of one of her stings. She's gasping for breath.
"Oh, thank God,"
Jen says, and she takes a wavering step backward and leans against the wall.
"They didn't get either of you."
Steve exhales hard. At least Jen survived. At least they're not all dead.
"Late to the meeting," Tony says, holding out his hands for the gauntlets.
"Sorry, not sorry."
"Wasp, sitrep," Steve says as he holsters his gun. "What's going on out there?"
"Quicksilver got the team out of the Triskelion in time to save their lives," and Steve has a relieved half-second to think, "Alright, they're safe," before Jen continues. "But they've all been captured. Fury, Pietro, Wanda, I just barely got away," she sighs. "Turns out Hank wanted to be useful, and when Nick wouldn't buy his robots, he ended up selling them to the other side. Idiot."
"My ex just tried to murder me," Tony offers. "I'm not judging."
"Who are we up against?" Steve asks. "I know they call themselves the Liberators, but that's about it."
"They're a multinational superhuman team with a grudge," Jen says despondently. "They've got one of everybody."
Steve makes room for another magazine in one of his belt pouches.
"Define everybody."
"Their leader's a guy from Azerbaijan with super soldier serum and some hard feelings about that disarmament. China threw in their own version of the Hulk, they're calling him the Abomination, and someone named the Crimson Dynamo, who's got his own suit of armor," she glances significantly at Tony. "He has 50 giant-sized versions of himself."
Tony flexes his gauntleted hands and sighs.
"Great, that'll be fun." "They've got a speedster, and a woman who controls insects, a guy they gave Thor's gear to, a man who can make duplicates of himself, and, she pauses.
"Thor's brother."
"The researcher?" Steve asks, incredulous.
"Oh shit," Tony says.
He looks like he wants to hit himself in the face, but he's wearing gauntlets.
"He was right. Thor, buddy, I'm so sorry."
He glances over at Jen.
"Do they have him? Thor?"
She shakes her head.
"Not that I saw. The basement cells were still secure."
"Do you think you can break him out?" Tony asks Jen.
"He's crazy," Steve says tightly. "He's crazy and they have his gear. I know you like the guy, Tony, but there are only three of us and we can't justify sending a third of our force back there, not when there's nothing he can do without his belt."
"That's what they want us to think," Tony says. "We were set up, Steve. Someone went to considerable effort to get him out of the way. I'm betting he's nowhere near as crazy as we're meant to believe. And I'm betting he's more powerful than we thought."
"You're saying he's the Norse god of thunder," Steve says flatly. "And that his brother is Loki, god of mischief and lies." Divine intervention would probably explain how his face ended up on the tape of him murdering Clint's family, wouldn't it? I'm saying he's been right about absolutely everything else, Tony says, and Steve can feel the sincerity down the bond. Come on, we need everyone we can get. And if he's right about who his brother is, we definitely need him on our side. I'm in, Jen says. I can get him. Okay, Steve says. He trusts Tony's judgment. Of course he trusts Tony's judgment. And then he blinks, because Tony only asks Jen, and that's strange. We can all go get him, actually. You can't, Tony says, and he pushes an earpiece into place. Well, you won't want to. Radio chatter says they fit a dozen major cities and they're in Washington holding the president hostage. And that's where they moved the rest of the Ultimates. Steve swears under his breath. You're right, he says. I'm going to DC. What are you doing? Tony grins at him and drops the helmet over his head. I've got your back, darling, he says. Got to go pick up a surprise, Tony says, and Steve glances to his left through the jet's plexiglass canopy to see Tony peeling off towards the sun in a red-gold blur. Don't worry, back in a bit. Honestly, the fact that Tony knew where S.H.I.E.L.D. kept its prototype jets and had, in fact, designed a couple of them, cloaking systems and all, and was able to help him get out of New York had been enough of a pleasant surprise that Steve's wondering what else Tony thinks they need. Steve is beginning to think he might be able to take back DC after all, but he does need Tony's help. What kind of surprise? Tony laughs. If I told you that it wouldn't be a surprise, you'll like it. You don't need me for phase one anyway. The first part of this plan is small scale and stealthy. Tony traced the rest of the Ultimate's transponders to the White House. Steve's going to break the rest of the team out and they'll go from there. I'll still need you, Steve says, and Tony's mind shines with happiness. The comm crackles.
New York is basically secure, Jen reports. I have Thor, not that he's doing much good, and I took down Swarm. She was the one with the insect powers. Captain Britain and the rest of the Europeans came to lend a hand. Thank God for international cooperation, Tony says. All right, give me 10 minutes, Cap, and I'll give you perimeter defenses like you've never seen. Wait until you see what I'm packing.
His voice lowers. Steve is sure Tony is smirking.
Is that innuendo?
Jen asks.
Ugh, no one wants to hear about your dick, Tony.
Tell her you want to hear about my dick, Tony suggests. Steve's grinning and it takes him half a second to identify that bright golden feeling within him as pure joy. Just ignore him and he'll stop. Let's not encourage him, Steve says, but he cuts his mic before he starts laughing. Please encourage me, Tony says. Later, Steve tells him. The nice thing about all the stealth gear that Tony has designed is that Steve can actually put the jet down pretty close to the White House and no one sees him coming. He evades the first and second set of perimeter guards, all wearing patches with a raised red fist. And soon enough, he's actually in the White House, his back to the wall, edging down a corridor in the West Wing. There are more guards now, wearing metallic suits that Steve dimly remembers seeing in one of those tech briefings. They give the wearer super strength, but S.H.I.E.L.D. had abandoned the research on them because they shaved off all but a month of the wearer's life. He supposes the Liberators don't care about a thing like that. The Ultimates are up ahead, Tony says. Big room on your left. Lifesign count is 28 guards. I have to take care of this thing for the next couple minutes. You're good on your own, right? I've got this, Steve says. He waves his shield on one arm and flips the safety of his gun. There is a brief burst of acknowledgement from Tony, and then the bond goes distant again, as Tony's concentrating very hard on something very technical. At least Steve can tune out the numbers and passcodes. He's not particularly thrilled about the 1 versus 28, but there's nothing he can do. 30 seconds and he's down the corridor, outside the door. He takes a breath, raises his gun and kicks the door in. Clint's standing in the middle of a scene of absolute carnage, with Wanda, Pietro and Fury behind him. Fury's hand is clutching the stump of a right arm that isn't there. Blood soaks his bandages. Clint's hands are thoroughly bandaged and he's almost entirely covered in blood. Steve hopes it's not all his, but his grip on his bow is steady. Thank God, they're a team again after all. I thought you were dead, Steve says. Clint says. Not so much. He glances around the room. Can't say the same for everyone else, though, he lifts his hat. Ready when you are, Captain. Steve meets Wanda, Pietro, and Fury's eyes in turn. Everybody ready? They nod. Fury picks up a gun with the only hand he's got. They're ready. Outside, through the shattered window, Steve can see robots stomping by. Giant robots and giant men in suits. That must be the Crimson Dynamo that Jan had mentioned. A bow and arrow isn't going to do much good against that. Neither are guns. Tony, he asks. Any luck? We've got robot problems. I've got you, Tony says. Stay right there. Airstrike incoming. Steve wants to ask him exactly where he thinks he's getting an airstrike from, given that the Liberators are controlling everything, but then the sky lights up blue-white as a huge beam of energy strobes down the street and the robots are just... gone. There is a giant floating laser platform and Tony next to it suited up. Tony waves. Hi, Steve, Tony says. You like your surprise? I love it, Steve says, and he knows Tony is smiling. Steve starts to work his way through the crowd of regular human adversaries while keeping tabs on the rest of the fight. Pietro takes the speedster down. The Crimson Dynamo is no match for Tony. Somewhere along the way, the guy with Thor's belt surrenders and the guy who makes multiple copies of himself... Hell, Steve can punch him. A lot. So he does. And there are smaller, man-sized robots, but they're not fighting. And then Hank Pym's voice comes over the comms.
Guys, I want you to know I'm with you. I infiltrated the enemy. My robots have specific instructions to hunt down the Liberators. Oh, hell no,
Clint says. Somewhere in the background, Pietro begins to swear. Quiet. If he's on our side, I'm taking him at his word, Steve says. We can sort out who ends up in custody later. There's a roaring noise from the vicinity of the Washington Monument that can only be the Abomination. Steve can see the huge green monster towering over everyone else between here and there. He remembers how much damage Hulk did to Manhattan all by himself. This guy's going to be tough. Then there's another roar, this one oddly familiar.
Hey,
Tony says, delightedly coasting above the battle.
Look who survived a tactical nuke to the face.
Bruce is alive. Steve almost can't believe it. But the Hulk, thank God, is happily disposing of the Abomination. They're winning. They're actually winning. They're going to take the country back.
Cap?
Clint says. Steve's not sure where he's holed up, but there have been sniper shots from somewhere, so it has to be somewhere useful.
There's a guy at the other end of the National Mall who nearly took my head up with a fucking lightsaber. I'm thinking he might be the guy in charge. Come check out Darth Maul.
Steve wisely does not ask, Darth who? Tony says, we'll get you caught up, as he soars overhead, and instead turns to Pietro. Quicksilver, can I get a lift? Pietro just nods. Tony, you ready this time? He asks, remembering how poorly he took this before. He can feel Tony stealing himself in the back of his mind. Ready. Pietro grabs his arms and the world is a blur of motion, and then Steve's standing at one end of the reflecting pool, and there is a man in a red and black uniform holding some kind of glowing red sword. The man smiles. Ah, Captain Rogers, a pleasure to meet you. Steve hefts a shield. I'm told you were looking for me. He nods. Abdul Rahman, I've waited half my life to rip that star from your chest. As introductions go, it's memorable. There are 10 or 12 men behind Al-Rahman, all wearing those super-strength suits. He gestures lazily to them, a raised hand. No interference. This is between him and me. Sounds good, Steve says, and he lifts a shield and braces for impact. Al-Rahman is fast, and that's the first shock. Steve just barely dodges the attack. Araman's glowing blade slices open the uniform at Steve's shoulder like it's made of paper and scores a line of fire down his arm. Steve, Tony says, and Steve doesn't need to look up to see Tony waver in the sky in shock from the blow. I can do this, Steve returns. But Araman presses on, the super soldier serum flows through his veins. Every move Steve makes he can counter, and he hits back just as hard. Steve punches as hard as he can, a blow that would down ordinary men, a blow that was good enough to take out a goddamn Chitauri, but Al-Rahman just takes it and keeps going.
Steve's supposed to be better than this. Even worse, Araman has noticed. Feeling outclassed, Captain? He asks as Steve narrowly avoids a strike that would have decapitated him. It must be terrible. All those years believing in the dream, in American exceptionalism, and maybe you're just not that special, eh? Maybe you're not good enough after all. How does that feel? For an instant, it's like Steve's a kid again, frail and broken, knowing deep down in his soul that he's never going to be good enough. Don't fucking listen to him, Tony snarls, but it's too late. Somehow everyone knows Steve's weaknesses, don't they? Araman gestures with one hand, and suddenly the men behind Steve are swarming him, holding him down. His shield is torn out of his grasp. So much for that non-interference. I wanted a fair fight, Araman muses as one of the men behind Steve forces his head back, baring his throat. But you can't expect me to walk away with nothing, not after everything you did to the people I loved. There's blood dripping down into Steve's eyes. He can barely see anything beyond the red smear of the glowing blade. So this is how it ends. I take no pleasure in what comes next, Araman says. The man forced Steve down as Araman raises the blade. He was right. Steve was never good enough. He dies here now, alone. He can't save himself. And then he hears Tony. You're not alone, Tony says. I've got you. Between one breast and the next, Tony's in his mind. Tony's closer than ever before, closer than Steve thought possible. There's nothing keeping the two of them apart. When Tony's heart beats, so does his. His thoughts are Tony's thoughts, and then the bond opens wide, 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 and strength pours through him, so much energy and he can move. He tears himself out of the grasp of the man holding him, rips the sword from Al-Rahman's hands and reverses it, stepping upward in one harsh motion. The thought goes through him. Al-Rahman's eyes are wide and frozen, glazing over in death. It's over. Tony lands next to him. Metal creaks as Tony runs to his side. He can't see Tony's face with the suit on, but then he doesn't need to. If I weren't wearing half a ton of metal, I think you know what I'd be doing, Tony says, and he very gingerly rests an armored hand on Steve's shoulder. How did you... Steve begins, but he realizes that they know all they need to know. How do I know? Tony says. You're my soulmate. Well, that's good enough for Steve. The rest of the Ultimates begin to gather around Steve, and then the sky burns with fire as a dark-haired man floats above them. Maybe it's not over after all. I am Loki, the man, the god, calls out. Half-brother to the wretched Thor and forgotten son of Odin. A sinister smile spreads across his face. But I've had enough of simply tinkering behind the scenes. You forced me to show my hand and thus you will suffer as no man has ever suffered. And then Wanda steps forward. Unless I stop you, of course. Steve doesn't know what she has up against her sleeve, but he hopes it's good enough. She's facing down a god. He can feel Tony's doubt. Please let this be enough. Loki scoffs. You, the little Scarlet Witch. All you can do is bend probability, my darling. What could you do against a god of mischief? Oh, I don't know, Wanda smiles. Increase the odds of someone showing up to kick your ass? She holds out her hands and the world goes scarlet. Behind her is Jen, who for some reason is 50 feet tall, Captain Britain, the rest of the European team, and Thor. Thor stands proud, head held high and his fists crackle with lightning. He's holding the hammer. Oh no, Loki says. Looking for trouble, Loki? Thor asks. I think I found religion, Tony says. Steve's just going to let the gods handle this one. So there are dragons, and trolls, and a giant wolf, and a rainbow, and a hell of a lot more fighting. Steve's not exactly sure how anyone is going to explain any of this, but they've won. They've done it. And here they are, standing in the rubble, shields carting away the bodies, and most of the team is sprawled out on the steps. Tony's still suited up, and from the low hum of activity down the bond, Steve guesses he's off helping the rescue workers move chunks of buildings.
The adrenaline's wearing off and Steve's beginning to feel the aches. He's pretty sure that the last time he actually slept was when he passed out, drugged, in Tony's bed. It's strange to think that was only 24 hours ago. God, he's exhausted. Which is maybe why he says it. We can't do this anymore, Steve says, and half the team turns around to stare at him. What? Thor asks. Not like that, Steve says. His hands clench, frustrated. The world needs the Ultimates, but we can't be S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Ultimates. We can't be the face of American foreign policy. We can't be their soldiers. We can't fight their wars. Otherwise this happens. He gestures at the chaos around them. Thor's face splits in a grin. Oh, now you agree with me. Come on, Pietro says. We did save the president. You're talking about going independent, Jen says. About us being our own superhero outfit. Yeah, Steve says. I guess I am. Jen frowns in thought. I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but there's a matter of funding, isn't there? Not just salaries, but everything. Weapons, equipment, conference space, million-dollar jets. Right now, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s picking up our tab, but bankrolling a team would be billions and billions of dollars. There is a quiet, mechanical humming noise, and then Tony's overhead, repulsors glowing, then dimming as he lands.
Gosh, Tony says. I wonder where the Ultimates might possibly find a billionaire to sponsor them.
His helmeted face turns toward Steve.
I don't know, Cap. Maybe you should think about that a bit. Maybe you can think of someone.
He cuts the external speakers, but down the bond Steve can hear him laughing. Tony, he says.
I'm in if you are,
Tony says.
Sounds like fun.
He raises his voice.
Everyone's invited back to my place tonight. Team party.
There are wrecked cheers from the rest of the Ultimates. His Ultimates. Their Ultimates. They're doing this. Together. This, Steve thinks, is going to be good. The party is excellent. It's more sedate than Steve would generally have expected of one of Tony's parties. They're down a few members. Bruce had disappeared after the Hulk took out the abomination, though Jan had assured them all he was doing fine. There's also less liquor in evidence than Steve expects of Tony in any situation, because most of the team isn't mixing booze with heavy-duty painkillers, and tonight that includes Tony. Thor's drinking like a fish, though. Steve supposes he's more than earned it. He's perched on a couch telling Wanda and Pietro about how Jen broke him out of the Triskelion cells. Jen's on his other side, throwing in details. Steve doesn't want to monopolize Tony, so mostly he just sits back and lets Tony make the rounds of the party. Tony's looking good, better than Steve would have thought for a guy who'd been in the middle of a battle this morning. Save for the bandage taped to his temple, you wouldn't even know. He's bright, he's smiling, he looks happy, Steve thinks. Then Tony catches his eye and the bond glints with affection, and Steve knows Tony's happy. It's good. And Christ, Tony's handsome. Steve catches himself looking at the way Tony moves, the way he walks with a little shimmy of his hips, the way he holds his hands. God, his bare hands, when he talks. The way the pale insides of his wrist disappear under his crisp cuffs, the edge of his collarbone revealed by the gap at the top of his shirt where he's left it unbuttoned. Steve catches himself pushing the thought back, the way he would have before. He would have told himself it didn't mean anything, told himself it meant something else, but it didn't. He always wanted this. And he realizes Tony wants him to look. Exactly, darling, Tony says with a wink. Clint puts in an appearance an hour or two in, which honestly Steve wasn't expecting. He has a 1,000-yard stare and Steve gets up to talk to him, because, hell, he's seen combat fatigue before and the man just lost his entire family. I got this one, Tony says, before Steve can get there and he cuts in front of him and heads to meet Clint at the door. He can't hear what Tony and Clint are saying over the general noise, and he feels like just eavesdropping via the soul wand would be rude, but Tony's broadcasting an aching, empathetic grief that's impossible to miss. Then Tony leans over and hugs Clint. Clint smiles, steps back, nods once. He glances over at Steve and touches his own forehead in a makeshift salute, and then he's out the door again.
Steve wends his way around the partygoers. Thor is out of his seat, refilling what looks like an honest-to-God flagon of mead, and joins Tony by the door. Natasha's dead, Tony says, very quietly. Clint took care of it. Steve reaches out and interlaces his fingers with Tony's. I'm sorry. It's all right, Tony says, in a voice that suggests that it really isn't. I'm just sorry she was never who I thought she was. Tony squeezes his fingers. Do you wish? Steve says that he can't finish the sentence. He shouldn't need Tony to tell him this. He shouldn't need Tony to reassure him. I mean, do you ever wish she... Tony shakes his head almost violently. Jesus, no. I wish she hadn't been a terrible human being. I wish she hadn't done what she did. But even if she had been a good person, I wouldn't trade you for anyone. He continues, vehement, earnest. No matter what, it's you for me, Steve. Always. I promise. Okay, Steve says. Okay. Tony's thumb rubs over the pulse of his wrist and Steve can't help but smile. They stand there, looking at the team assembled at the night sky beyond. It's quite a view. Soak it all in while you've got the chance, Tony says. Next week the whole penthouse is getting scrapped. This level is going to be the hangar for the team base. Gotta put the jets somewhere. Steve blinks. You move fast. Only sometimes, Tony says with a smile that Steve isn't quite sure whether to interpret as lascivious. Some things it's worth spending time on. Steve can feel himself blush. I'll remember that. See that you do, Tony says. His voice is low, husky and... Okay, yeah, they need to make it through the party first. Steve's looking forward to the end of it. Eventually, the party winds down, of course. Wanda and Pietro leave first, then Jen, and then Thor, who wanders to the recently repaired elevator singing drinking songs in a language Steve doesn't recognize. And then it's just him and Tony left. Tony's at the other end of the living room, maybe 10 feet away, tidying up abandoned cups with the air of someone desperately stalling for time. Well, Tony says, glancing over at him, his tone deliberately careful. As if this is casual when they both know it's anything but. Thanks for coming to this little shindig. If you want, I can get you right back to Brooklyn, if that's what you want. Steve takes a deep breath. I was kind of hoping. He begins and he can feel himself trembling. That if I asked, you'd let me spend the night. The only noise in the room is a tiny, sharp sound of Tony's breath catching in his throat. They stare at each other in silence. Tony's closer to the window than he is, outlined by the Manhattan skyline, the darkness kept at bay by the two of them, by this bubble of light. Tony's eyes are wide. He licks his lips. The bond pulses with a longing that feels weighty somehow, momentous. Like this, here, now, it changes everything. I love you too much to even consider saying no. Tony says, his voice barely above a whisper as Steve's heart trips and pounds in his chest. But if you run away again, you'll break my heart and I'll let you do it. His mouth curves in a smile that's so very sad. You can have whatever you want, anything you want. If you never want to touch me, I can work with that, just please. He says hoarsely and he's begging and that's when Steve realizes there are tears in Tony's eyes. Please don't leave me. Shaking, Steve takes a halting, stumbling step forward, then another. Then he's holding out his hands and then Tony's in his arms. Tony's leaning against him, arms wrapped tight around him. They're holding each other up. Somehow his hands are on Tony's face and their mouths meet and they're kissing and kissing and kissing. I'm here, Steve says. I'm sorry and I'm here and I'm staying, for good. He pushes everything he has into the soul bond. Every bit of love, every ounce of reassurance, everything he can possibly give Tony. Now Tony's the one shaking, shivering in his arms, kissing him back. Tony breaks a kiss and tips his forehead against Steve and he's smiling. Down the bond there's a tentative joy. Can I? Steve whispers. Can we? Tony's smile turns teething. Can we what? You know what I mean, Steve says impatiently. I hear you're some kind of mind reader.
Tony laughs. Maybe so, but I like hearing you say it. Can you take me to bed? Steve says. His voice is low and smooth, and Tony shudders against him. Yeah, Tony says with a dazed, half-delirious laugh. I can definitely do that. Last time, Tony had led him slowly to bed. This isn't going to be like last time. They're running up the stairs together, holding hands. He pauses to kiss Tony again. God, why haven't they been kissing this entire time? And he works Tony's shirt open as he does. By the time they get to the bedroom, Tony's shirt is hanging off him and his hair is disheveled. It's a really good look on him. He's about to pull Tony's shirt off him and start working on his own clothes when Tony leans in and kisses him. He locks his hands around Steve's wrist and slowly pulls his arms down. Shh, Tony murmurs against his lips. It's not a race, darling. You can slow down a little. I'm not going to disappear if you don't get me in bed before midnight. I know, Steve says, but at the same time it feels like he has to. He has to know now if he can do this. And, God, he could have died today. They both could have died. It could have been too late. Not too late, Tony kisses him again. Never too late. We're here now. This is what they have. They're here. They're making the most of it. It's all they can do. Okay, Steve says. Okay, we are. He pushes Tony's shirt back off his shoulders, and God, there's so much of Tony to touch. Warm skin under his bare hands, the bond between them lighting up with every touch. He kisses Tony as he pushes him back toward the bed, as he undoes Tony's belt with one hand as he pulls out Tony's cock. He can feel it in his own body, like he's touching himself. He's not afraid, not anymore. This is Tony and he loves him. Tony tips his head back as Steve kisses him again, exposing his throat, and then it seems like the most natural thing in the world to keep going, to press kisses to Tony's collarbone, his pecs across his ribs, then lower and lower until Steve sinks to the floor, his mouth inches from Tony's cock as Tony sits on the edge of the bed. Steve's mouth waters. His cock throbs in his pants. He wants to. God, he wants to. Tony gasps, a small, soft, vulnerable sound. His thighs are shaking, a fine tremor in the muscle, but he doesn't press forward. You don't have to. His mental voice is earnest. You never have to, okay? I want to, Steve says, and he leans forward and takes Tony's cock in his mouth. He'd imagined that he would feel debased, lowered, used, powerless. He feels anything but. The weight of Tony's cock on his tongue filling his mouth is somehow comforting. He knows Tony is enjoying this. Tony is very carefully holding still, but he's breathing heavily, his breath's half voice moans. And the soul bond's phantom sensation on his own cock, well, that's a hell of a thing. And even though he doesn't know what he's doing, for once his ignorance doesn't wound him. Tony knows. Tony can tell him how to do this. He kind of liked the idea of that. He doesn't have to be in charge. Tony's going to show him. You're doing great, Tony says. Just like that. God, you could, with your hand? Like this? Steve obligingly wraps his hand around the base of Tony's cock. He doesn't dare to try to take him all in, the way Tony had done for him, but he licks the head of Tony's cock as he tightens his hand on the shaft, tight, the way he knows Tony likes, and at least he knows how to do this part. Tony moans, and Tony's cock jerks in his mouth, and God, Tony really likes this. Tony's hand cuts through his hair, settles on his scalp. Steve waits for the fear that Tony could hold him down, could make him do this, and then he realizes that he'd do it. That's what he wants. He wants Tony inside him. He wants Tony to be in control. He wants Tony to open him up and slide inside him and show him everything, all the things he's never known. He wants that. He realizes his free hand is on his own cock, rubbing his erection through his pants, so worked up by the thought of it, by Tony rocking ever so slightly into his mouth that he could practically go off just from this. He sits back.
He knows Tony was close, and for an instant the bond goes disjoint, and Tony's just sitting there, blinking down at him, wondering where he went. Tony's chest is heaving and his eyes are unfocused. Steve did this to him. There is a glow of pride in his chest. "You should see yourself," Tony says. "God, you're gorgeous." There's a reflected image then, him kneeling here between Tony's legs, fully dressed but in every other aspect clearly a mess. His lips are red and bruised, slick and wet. His eyes are dark, hazy, sultry, and he's looking up at Tony with a gaze full of longing. Steve's never seen himself look like that in all his life. But it's him now. This is what Tony Steve looks like. "Can I kiss you?" he asks, and Jesus, he sounds like sex. Of course he does. He's been sucking Tony's cock. His cock twitches again. In reply, Tony tucks him up and over, and their mouths meet as Steve topples over onto him. His cock presses against Tony, and even closed, he's rocking up against Tony, hips thrusting forward as Tony pushes back against him, as Tony's tongue slides into his mouth, as Tony frantically arches up against him. They break the kiss just long enough for Steve to lean back and haul his shirt over his head and, God, yes, Tony's fingers work at his fly and Tony's shoving his pants off and Steve manages to get his boots off, God knows where they'll end up, before pulling Tony over next to him. Tony thrusts up against him, his cock sliding up along Steve's cock. The bond mirrors it, doubles it, the sensation echoing back. "Do you want to come like this?" Tony asks. He turns his head and kisses him and keeps thrusting, and God, if they keep doing this, it's going to happen in about the next 10 seconds and they won't have a choice. "Do you want us to come like this?" Tony flails a hand over to brace him, his palm on the small of Steve's back, and Steve thinks about Tony's hand sliding lower and lower, and he wants that. He gets his hands on Tony's shoulders and pushes Tony away. Panting, bereft, Tony stares at him before blinking and getting his bearings. "Not like this," Tony breathes. "Okay, just say the word. What do you want? I can suck you off again." "Not that," Steve says. I want... He doesn't know how to say it. All the words he knows for it just sound so angry and crude, and that's not what he wants at all. "I want us to make love." Tony blinks again, long lashes fluttering against his cheeks. "Darling, you might need to say more words than that. I thought we already were. Is this one of those 40s things where you mean something different than I do?" He can't say it. Even the soul bond is failing him. He can't ask for it with sensations, with memories, because he has nothing to compare it to. He knows what it was like to be inside Gale and Jen. Would it be like that for Tony? He doesn't know how it feels to open up and let someone in, but he remembers it all-encompassing warmth. He wants to be that for Tony. He wants to give that to Tony. He wants to know what it's like. Tony must catch the tenor of his thoughts then, because he pauses. His cheeks are flushed, his eyes dark, and his tongue runs around his lips. "Oh," he says softly. "Oh, that... Of course, darling." He smiles like he knows a wonderful secret and he's looking forward to sharing it with Steve. Steve wonders if this is how he was always supposed to feel, excited instead of ashamed and ignorant. "Have you ever done it like that with a woman? Probably not, hmm?" Tony smiles, avid. "You'll love it. It's tighter this way. You really will love it." He hadn't quite been expecting Tony to say yes so fast and he stares, dumbfounded. "I will?" "Of course you will," Tony says, and he's pushing himself away, flailing behind him in the nightstand, getting out a condom and a bottle of... something. Tony takes advantage of the increased distance to give him an admiring once-over. "I won't lie, I've been looking forward to getting that in me for ages. Bent over the desk, on the conference table, up against the wall, so many fantasies." "Oh, he hadn't exactly said, and Tony had assumed..." He gets his hand around Tony's wrist as Tony moves to flip open the bottle. "Not like that," Steve says, and apprehension clouds his mind, because if Tony had assumed that,
Maybe that means he doesn't want what Steve wants. But he's come this far. He can say it now. He can be this brave. I meant, the other way around. You inside me, if that's something you want. His gaze is still focused on Tony's wrist as he says it, and he looks helplessly up into Tony's face when he finishes. Tony's mouth is half open, slack with surprise, and he can feel Tony's astonishment down the bond. There's desire, too, a sudden burst of it, an intense wave, and he knows Tony wants it. He knows that Tony has wanted it, that Tony was never going to say. There is a tinge of secrecy around the edge of the feeling. Tony mouths, "Is that something you want?" soundlessly, incredulously, like he can't believe Steve thinks he would never not want this. Like it's something he always wanted but never thought he could have. Tony seems to be at a loss for words. The bond is still full of surprise, and it takes him a few tries before he speaks. "Are you sure?" Tony says, very softly. "It's a big step. We don't have to do everything all at once, you know." Tony doesn't want to frighten him. He knows that. "I know," Steve says, but Tony clearly wants something more from him than that, so he knows he has to try to explain. "And I'm scared because I've never done it, but I want it more than anything. I want to know what it's like. And I don't want to look back later and think about the things I could have done but was too scared to try. We're here now and we have a chance. I don't want to miss our chance. I want to make the most of it." He knows Tony knows what he means. He knows their time together is finite. Tony's blinking back tears. "Yeah," Tony says hoarsely. "Yeah, I know what you mean." "And you strike me as the kind of guy who knows exactly what you're doing," Steve says. "I think you'd know how to show me a good time." He puts a little edge of desire in the words. He wants that. All of Tony's experience. All of Tony's skill brought to bear on him. The thought is heady. Now Tony smiles. "I'm going to make you so happy," he says. "You just lie back and let me take care of you." Steve can do that, but it doesn't sound like much fun for Tony if he's just lying there. "It'll be good for you though, right?" Tony's smile grows even wider. "Oh, I'm definitely going to enjoy this." Tony nudges Steve onto his side and then his front. He can't quite see Tony from here, and despite himself, his stomach knots up with tension. Tony's not touching him. He pictures Tony looming over him. "Easy," Tony says, and he settles a hand on Steve's shoulder. "What, did you think I was just gonna stick it in you?" It's not like Steve had done any better with Gail. He can feel his face color and he buries his head in his pillowed arms. "It's okay," Tony says. "No one's born knowing everything. It's okay not to know. But I'm not putting anything at all in you until you're good and relaxed." There is a pressure of lips against Steve's shoulder blade. Tony was good at foot rubs, but Steve discovers that Tony is amazing at back rubs. Tony works up and down his back, kneading his fingers into the muscles until Steve relaxes bonelessly into the mattress. It's nice, but scrupulously chaste. "You could go lower," Steve suggests, hopefully. Tony's hands work even lower, and then suddenly it isn't chased at all. Tony's fingers smooth over his lower back, over his ass, and even the feather-light sensation makes Steve's cock jump, trapped between his belly and the mattress. He hitches his hips up into Tony's touch, a reflex he didn't know he had, and he hears a broken moan that must be him. God, he didn't know it would feel this good. It's a ridiculous thought, because it must feel good, otherwise why would anyone do it? But he didn't know. Tony chuckles. "It gets even better." Tony nudges Steve's legs apart with a warm hand. Jesus, Steve didn't know that even his thighs were so sensitive. Tony just keeps his hand there and strokes his inner thighs gently. "The way you respond to this," Tony says, almost reverently. "God, it's like I'm the one doing this for the first time." The bond brims with contentment. "I'm going to get the loop out. Use my hands, okay?" It sounds great, but it seems remote. He wants to watch. He wants to see. Steve pushes himself up on his elbows and tries to turn over. "Can I see?" He can feel Tony considering this. "You're definitely limber enough for it,
Roll back over? Steve does, and Tony promptly wedges a pillow under him so his ass is in the air. He feels exposed. His face seeds and he realizes Tony's looking at him, and he realizes Tony likes it. He realizes he likes it. I thought I was the show-off, Tony says with a fond smile. He's squeezing something clear and vicious from the bottle onto his hands. Got to slick you up first. Okay, Steve bites his lip. This is it. This is really it. Relax, Tony says. It's going to be good. He continues aloud. Fair warning, since you don't know what to expect. It will probably feel weird at first, but it's not going to hurt. It's just going to feel weird. Steve nods. Okay. Tony sets the bottle down, smiles an encouraging smile, and puts one hand on Steve's cock. He strokes him slowly, lightly, clearly not intending to bring him off. His other hand comes up to fondle Steve's balls, the way he's always liked, and the combined sensation makes Steve gasp and twist, pushing up into Tony's grip. And then the hand on his balls slides lower, further back, and somehow it still feels good as Tony's slick fingers rub over his hole in time with Tony's hand on his cock. He wants more. Tony's watching his face intently. Good? Can't Tony tell from the bond? Oh yes, Steve breathes. More. And then Tony pushes one finger inside him and it's just strange. It doesn't feel bad, but it's nothing like the amazing ripple of sensation his fingers had on the outside. It feels like it's not somewhere anything is supposed to be. Steve bites his lip. Yeah, Tony says. That's what I meant by weird. Steve can feel his cock starting to soften even in Tony's grip and, Jesus, that's never happened before. Is there something wrong with him? Tony leans in and kisses the inside of Steve's knee. Perfectly normal, he says. Your body's still trying to figure out how to feel about this. Tony works his finger in and out, seemingly unfazed, and the sensation slowly shifts from strange to neutral. But it's not good. Maybe Steve is doing it wrong. Tony adds another finger, and that just adds extra strangeness. But it doesn't hurt, at least. He feels a little stretch. He frowns and squeezes down. It's almost pleasant. He supposes this is as good as it gets. He feels so open. He must be ready now. There we go, Tony murmurs and he smiles. See, you're loosening up. This is the part where we figure out if you're actually going to like, well, what I think you're going to like. With your sensitivity, I'm betting on yes. Steve squints. What are you talking about? Tony gives him a brilliant smile. This, he says, and he does something with his fingers, shifting them inside Steve and... For a blinding moment, there's nothing in him but pleasure. He arches up, pushing against Tony's fingers, wanting more, 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 forcing Tony's fingers on that spot. He's gasping, panting, his head thrown back. If Tony just keeps touching him there, God, he could come just from that. That's how good it is. Oh yeah, Tony says, a little smugly, but Jesus, he's earned it. You'll like that. Steve, still gasping. Yes, please, Tony, please. He didn't know it was going to be like this. He thought it was going to be good, all right, but good because of Tony being with him, of the intimacy of Tony being close. He didn't think it was going to feel like Tony could rewire his brain, every circuit pointing to pleasure. He didn't think Tony could make him beg for it. He never wanted anything this much. Tony shifts position, making his fingers inside Steve to even more interesting things, and leans down and kisses him. Now you're ready, Tony says, and Steve can feel him smile against his lips. Tony slides his fingers back out, and Steve feels wet and achingly empty as Tony reaches for the condom. You don't need that, Steve says, unless you want it. Serum means I don't get or carry diseases anymore. Must be nice. Tony is somber and he's silent for a moment before continuing on. You have a preference? It gets messier for you without. I assume so anyway. Not that I've ever personally had the opportunity. Tony's smile is abashed and Steve marvels that he's found something Tony Stark, of all people, has never done in bed.
Steve plucks the condom out of Tony's hand and tosses it away. I want to feel it when you come inside me. Jesus. Tony swallows hard. Keep talking like that and I might not make it that far. Come on then, Steve says, and he pulls Tony down on top of him. It feels so right. Tony's body settles against his, warm and heavy and solid. This is what he's been missing all this time. He feels safe, protected, loved. He lets his legs fall open, feels the press of Tony's hips against his thighs, and he knows this is where he was meant to be. Tony has a steadying hand on him, moving him around, hitching his leg up, and then Tony smiles down at him. Breathe, darling. Steve breathes in and out, and then there is a blunt pressure against his hole, bigger than fingers pushing forward, and for an instant he thinks, what if I can't? But he breathes and tries to relax, and then, oh God, Tony's inside him. He can feel it through the bonds, a sensation shared and doubled, and Tony's pausing to let him get used to it. But he's ready now. He wants more, he wants everything. Tony pushes all the way in, as far as he can go, and Tony's staring down at him, dark-eyed and dazed, drunk on happiness, ecstatic, like Steve's body is a religious experience, and it's like nothing Steve has ever felt. It's like nothing Tony has ever felt. The bond opens wide between them, and then they're one. He doesn't know what he feels and what Tony feels. It doesn't matter. It happens to both of them. Tony pulls back just far enough to thrust in again, and they're both gasping with the pleasure, the feeling from both sides taking and being taken. Tony presses himself close, rocking against Steve with slow little rolls of his hips that touch that place inside him that makes Steve arc up and search for more. Tony slides a hand over Steve's hip up his side, and Steve knows if Tony just touched his cock he'd come, but that he doesn't want it to be over. Steve reaches up and strokes Tony's face and drops his hand to capture Tony's. Steve's never done this before, but his body knows what to do. He knows what Tony needs, how to match Tony's rhythm as Tony drives into him, how to tighten down around his cock, making Tony cry out. The pleasure echoes down the bond and Steve sobs aloud. He can't stop touching Tony. He drops Tony's hand to run his fingers over the corded muscle of Tony's arms, over Tony's flexing shoulders. Tony's so strong and the thought thrills him, and gasping he pulls Tony closer so Tony can slide deeper into him. Oh, he's got the perfect angle now. He knows he can't last. Neither of them can. Nothing lasts forever after all. He knows Tony's close as he is. Tony thrusts into him, hard, one, two, three times, and then Tony wraps his hand around Steve's cock and strokes him once, gently, and that's it. That's it, Steve's gone. He's coming, and his own pleasure pushes Tony over the edge. Tony's gasping and coming. Steve's senses are keen enough that he can feel it, can feel Tony's cum spurting hot and wet inside him, and that thought is enough to make his own cock twitch and spurt again, a messy arc all over his stomach. He tightens down around Tony, who moans brokenly as his cum drips out of Steve's body, as he thrusts through the aftershocks until it's finally over. Tony's arms give out and Steve pulls them close. Tony pillows his head on Steve's chest and lies there, panting, satiated, until he finally pulls out. It's a little messy, and Tony smiles at the face Steve makes. Tony wipes them both up and then curls up on top of him again. That was, Steve says, and then he gives up because there aren't words. I know, Tony says, I know. He slides up Steve's body and kisses him, long and lingering and sweet. The world is warm and hazy, and there's nothing in it except him and Tony. Steve wraps his arms around Tony. We can do that again sometime, right? Tony's smile is fond. Every night, darling. He doesn't know how long that's going to be. There are no guarantees. But he loves Tony, and Tony loves him, and he's going to stay with him every night, and that's got to be enough. Waking in the morning is an oddly familiar experience. Steve's only slept in Tony's bed once before, but he's seen it through Tony's eyes most mornings. The high ceiling, the slant of light through huge windows. It all feels like something he's always done, even though he's never spent the night here before. Tony's next to him, lying in a pool of sunshine, and Steve's definitely never woken up next to Tony before. Steve's never woken up next to anyone before. Tony's skin is gilded by the morning light. His chest rises and falls as he breathes. There's the slightest smile on his face. Steve wants to wake up like this every morning. Tony's eyes flicker open and his smile grows wider. "Good morning," Steve tells him. "You stayed?" Tony's mental voice is awed, grateful. "I stayed." Steve leans in and kisses Tony, and Tony kisses back, and Steve wonders, hopefully, if they can just stay here in bed all day. Someone clears their throat from the doorway. Steve turns his head, sees Jarvis, then yelps and scrambles for the covers. Tony, much more blasé, doesn't even bother moving. "Good day, sir," Jarvis says, unflappable. "Your appointment is in an hour and a half. Will Captain Rogers be staying for breakfast?" "Yeah, sure," Tony says lazily. "Get him breakfast," he frowns. "Get him 2 breakfasts. He eats a lot." "Very good, sir," Jarvis says as he disappears. "Sorry," Tony says. "Should have warned you. He's seen worse from me anyway." Steve makes his hands unclench from the covers. "No problem," he says. "So what's on the agenda for today?" "Nothing much." But Tony's bright smile dims ever so slightly, shadowed. "Doctor's appointment, one of my oncologists." "Oh." There's something hard and cold in the pit of Steve's stomach. Even now, even after all this, even though they've finally found each other, Tony's still dying. There is nothing they can do but make the most of the time they have. "Do you want me to go with you?" Steve asks. There's the tiniest pulse of hope down the bond. Steve realizes he's never asked Tony this before. "You don't have to," Tony says hesitantly. "It's not like it's going to be anything exciting. You'd just be sitting in a waiting room for a while where they scan my head, and then they tell me about my worsening prognosis. You wouldn't be missing much." That sounds like something no one should be alone for. "Yeah," Steve says. "But do you want me there?" He remembers what Bucky told him. "Don't leave him," he thinks. He thinks maybe he's learned something. Tony pauses for a few seconds. Like this, out of everything he's said, is the hardest to admit. "Yes," he says. "Please." Steve takes Tony's hand. "Then you've got me." After Tony goes in, Steve is the only person in the waiting room. The coffee table is piled high with years-old magazines, which are actually of some interest to Steve, being as most of them are from when he was in the ice, so all the old news is nothing he remembers. He leaves through articles about Y2K half-heartedly. All of his thoughts are with Tony. Tony's lying there in some kind of very loud machine that's almost claustrophobically tight. Tony knows what kind of machine it is, of course, as well as a bunch of facts about the procedure. It's not invasive. Other than the dye injection at the beginning, Tony's mostly just bored, although his feelings about hearing the impending results of the scan, well, those are dismal. "This is actually much more entertaining with you here," Tony informs them. "Oh, flip back, I want to read that." "Whatever you want," Steve tells them, and they go through the entire magazine together, finishing by the time Tony's scan is done. The doctor, the woman who interprets the scan anyway, is in the next room over, and when Tony slides out of the scanner, he sits up and waits like he's done this a million times before. "I'm sorry, Mr. Stark," the doctor says. "We're experiencing some kind of technical problem. We're going to need to redo the scan." Steve can feel Tony sigh inwardly, but of course Tony smiles his best smile. "Fine by me," Tony says, and he lies back down again. During the second scan, Tony starts getting restless. In the waiting room, Steve runs out of computer magazines and there are only old issues of National Geographic. And then the doctor comes out again. "I'm terribly sorry about all this, Mr. Stark," and her face is a picture of bewilderment. "But..." "Oh, fuck me," Tony says, but he keeps smiling. "Still not better?" she shakes her head. If you could come with me down the hall, the CT scanner is free. Of course, Tony says. Steve zones out somewhere near the middle of the fourth scan, the one that comes after the CT scan. He knows they must be talking about the scan results, but Tony's been nothing but quietly frustrated the whole time, not seeking him out. He supposes if Tony wants him, he'll ask. And then Steve sits bolt upright, because all at once there is an overwhelming swell of emotion from Tony, a tidal wave, too much to tell if it's bad or good. But Jesus, he's in his doctor's office being told about his brain tumor, of course it's bad. Tony? But he's not sure Tony hears him. Tony's too caught up in this, whatever it is. Steve's on his feet instantly, and he doesn't know what he's doing or where he's going, but he knows Tony needs him. Captain Rogers? The door opens and there is a nurse standing there. Mr. Stark, he's... I need to see him. Steve's voice is hoarse. Please. It's going to be all right, he says to Tony, even though, oh God, it isn't and it can't be. The nurse leads him down the hall and opens the door to an exam room, and there is a doctor in there, but mostly there's Tony sitting on an exam table, fully dressed, and he's shaking, and he raises his head, and he's been crying. Steve takes 3 steps forward and he wraps his arms around Tony. He doesn't care about the doctor. He doesn't care about anything but Tony. It's going to be okay, he repeats. I'm not leaving you, no matter what. Tony lifts his head and he's smiling? It's going to be better than okay, Tony says, and that's when Steve realizes that the tears in Tony's eyes are tears of joy. The bond pulses with a tentative, incredulous happiness. How can any of this be good news? What's going on here? Steve asks. You're going to want to sit down for this, Captain, the doctor says. Steve sits on the table next to Tony so he can hold Tony's hand. Steve, it's in remission, Tony says, aloud, and the word doesn't make any sense at first, and Tony's still crying. Spontaneous and total, the doctor says. She puts up 3 different scans. Steve doesn't know what he's supposed to be looking at. They all just look like a brain to him. I thought it was equipment error at first. He looks like someone who has never had a brain tumor. There are no traces. Even her smile is looking a little misty-eyed. That's when Steve gets it. He's not dying, Steve says shakily, and Tony squeezes his hand. You're not joking, right? Tony's going to be okay. Tony's going to live. The thought is nearly unbelievable. They can be together. God, they have a future. It's a miracle, the doctor says. I don't understand how this is possible. I wish I knew. It shouldn't be possible. The way the tumor was developing, people just don't heal from that. Not like this, but he did. And then Steve knows exactly why. It's him. I wouldn't be able to get cancer, he says slowly. If it were me, I couldn't get it. I have a healing factor. The serum would heal it. She squints at him. I have to say that I'm not an expert on your particular set of circumstances, Captain, but that's my understanding. Tony already knows where he's going. Holy shit, Tony murmurs somewhere at the edge of his mind. It's me, Steve says. I'm the miracle. The doctor's just staring at him. When they tested the pain transference of the soul bond at S.H.I.E.L.D., what they did was hurt me because they knew I'd heal fast, Steve says. That was all they did to confirm that. That was all they needed to do to prove it existed. No one ever tested it in the opposite direction. Tony's mind is dazed with shock, but he's catching up fast. Not until we were in combat, anyway. We were in Norway, Steve remembers, and you took that hit from Thor, the one that felt like it damn near stove your chest in. It didn't, Tony says. It didn't, though. It was just bruising. Steve shakes his head. You didn't get the armor off for hours. No one physically checked you until then. He pauses. I'd probably have healed it by then, if it had been me. And your head, Tony. You stopped getting those headaches. Down the bond there is a dawning realization. I haven't had one since probably the time you took me to meet Bucky and Gale. Jesus. And we were in combat yesterday, Steve says urgently. He has to lay this all out. He needs to know if it's true. You got that head wound, what, 24 hours ago? He gestures at Tony's temple, where gauze is still taped down. Just about, Tony agrees. It had bled hard, like most head wounds. Tony had gotten one of his techs to patch him up at the same time as he'd been putting the armor on, because they hadn't had the time for anything more elegant. Steve had watched the guy clean up the cut and slap a bandage on it. Steve reaches out and peels away the tape and then the gauze. The butterfly bandage on Tony's face is holding together nothing. The skin is perfectly clear, no scars, no sign that he was ever hurt. I healed you, Steve whispers, awed. It's not just pain that transfers down the bond, it's everything. There are tears rolling down Tony's cheeks. You saved my life, Tony says, his mind full of joy and gratitude. God, Steve, you saved my life. This is amazing, the doctor says, and Steve belatedly remembers they're not actually alone in the room. Would it be possible to run more tests? There are going to be a lot of people who want to talk to you. Yes, Tony says. Yes, of course. He smiles a little awkwardly. Maybe a bit later, though? I'll call. I need some time to process this. No problem, the doctor says. She still looks stunned herself. Steve bets she never gets to deliver this news. It was nice meeting you, Steve says, and he realizes as Tony tucks him out the door that he doesn't even know her name. Tony's dragging him down the hallway, fast, like he's got somewhere to be, but they have all the time in the world now. They stop because they have to, because they're waiting for the elevator. And Tony smiles at him, and he smiles back, and he can't believe this is real, but it is. It is. So what do you want to do now? Steve asks. The elevator opens, and Tony pushes him into the empty elevator, back against the wall. Honestly? Tony says. Right now I just want to take you back to bed. Steve smiles and kisses him. Yeah, Steve says. I can work with that. He remembers how it felt to wake up in that hospital bed at S.H.I.E.L.D. It feels so long ago now. He'd hated the future then. But everything is bright and beautiful now. He has Tony, his soulmate. It's not the future he ever thought he'd have. It's better. It's their future, he thinks, and all he can feel down the soul bond is Tony's gratitude, Tony's joy, Tony's love. It's their future together. The end.
You can't find him, the way is dim. You feel like giving up. You ache for her, rest assured. It's never too late for love. You say you're tired. How I hate to hear you use that word every time it hurts. You say you're tired. How I hate to hear you use that word. Everybody hurts. I've felt your pain, and I know your sorrow. You could try to let the past slip away, live for today. Don't stop believing.